You're listening to another episode of VGCast. VGCast, of course, is our video game podcast where we digest the latest video game news in our changelog, where we chat about what we've been playing in our game queue, and then, of course, what to look forward to in the world of the video game industry. I'm your host, Brad Johansson, and with me today, as always, is our co-host and buddy, the bastard son of Emperor Palpatine, Troy Giles. What's up, man?
Oh, not much. Counting down the days until Star Wars The Force Awakens comes out.
Is it 3 days now at the time of this recording? So, yeah.
2 days for me.
Oh, that's right. You're going to a Thursday showing?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, that's pretty sweet. I'm going Friday at 10:30, so no spoilers.
I'm not. I wasn't going to do... What am I? One of the people on the internet? I'm not going to spoil it.
That's pretty crazy. I haven't seen any reviews for this film yet, which is bizarre.
There's a lot of, like... I'm seeing a lot of people doing the... Here's a non-spoiler take on The Force Awakens. And I don't even want to click on those, just in case. Yeah,
I've been seeing quite a few celebrity tweets saying, I assume they've done a premiere mostly for celebrities and not for actual movie critics, because there are like zero official critical reviews out right now. But there are a lot of celebrities who got to see it, and I've been watching some of the tweets, and a lot of them are saying, those of you who are completely, you know, spoiler free, you're kind of in for a treat, because there are lots and lots of things here that are really cool that people were so happy they did not get that stuff spoiled for them. So I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, I do know that one of the podcasts I listened to, or from a site called Double Toasted, they actually had a screening in Austin today at 10 o'clock. Either 10 o'clock this morning. Yeah, it was 10 o'clock that morning. This morning they were actually able to screen it, so they were lucky. But they don't usually put out their reviews until Wednesday night, usually. So there might be an embargo on it also, you know,
yeah,
people that think get a screening of it, there might be an embargo, but I'm not even going to listen to that podcast until Friday after I've seen it. I don't even want to know what anybody else thinks of it. I don't care, because it's Star Wars.
Well, this is not a Star Wars podcast, as much as we would both love to do one of those. Unfortunately, all of the material has been removed. Thank you to Disney. But yeah, that would be really awesome. Anyway, this is a video game podcast. So we got to kick this thing off in a rather unusually slow week. Granted, we're both happy for that, considering the last week we were bombarded with news stories. So yeah, let's start off like we always do, Troy, at the top of your changelog. Changelog, of course, is the news in the video game industry. So Troy, what is number one on your changelog?
Oh, they're back with a vengeance, guys. It's microtransactions. Those things that we love to hate and hate to love.
Oh, boy. Who's getting burned this time?
Well, it looks like anybody that's playing an Activision game is getting burned, because both Destiny and Call of Duty Black Ops 3 will be providing us with microtransactions. Well, you know what? Call of Duty's not too bad, considering that it's just cosmetic changes to the characters and stuff during multiplayer. So it's not a pay-to-win button. It's just, hey, if you want your character to look a little bit more unique, here you go. Here's some Call of Duty dollars or something like that is what they're calling them. Call of Duty points. Actually, if you log in right now, I think until the end of the month, you get, or the end of the week, either one, you get 200 Call of Duty points for just logging in and playing a game of multiplayer, I believe. So, yeah, it's just cosmetic changes for Call of Duty.
Have they outlined any other way to receive those points? Like, is this a one-time event where if you play within the next, whatever you said, couple of weeks, you get 100 or 200 Call of Duty points, and then after that, that's it? You got to pay real money?
I think so. I think that's only way to get it. But like I said, it's only cosmetic stuff. So, I mean, you know, for those people that love the cosmetic things, this could be a pain for them, but anybody else, you know, it would be fine.
Unfortunately, I feel like even though it's just cosmetics and I am okay with that, this is making Halo look pretty, because one of my biggest beefs with Halo was that they had cosmetic microtransactions, but more importantly, they had the microtransactions that allowed you to get the bonus weapons or better tanks, whatever, in their massive Warzone map style, whatever that's called, their game mode. But they restricted that in Arena. But how they kind of gave an excuse for that was free map packs. How many of those map packs on Call of Duty are free? Zero.
Yeah, most, none. The only reason they would actually make one free is they'll announce it ahead of time. Like they'll have like more like if it's a free map, it's one of the ones that have been out before.
Oh man, this is I have a feeling you're going to tell me something a little more ridiculous after this, but this is unfortunately, if 20 million people play Call of Duty, and I'm sure it's more than that, but if 20 million people play Call of Duty and even 100,000 of them, if they do this, they're probably making pure profit off of that because I can't imagine the revenue cost would be too high. So, I mean, this has got to be just a cash cow, even if they get like 0.01% of gamers playing this game to dive into this. So totally see why they do it. Oh man, I hope this is not the steady trend, and it appears like it is. That sucks.
Yeah, I'm reading on it right now. It's apparently, since I haven't played Call of Duty Black Ops 3, you get supply drops in the game, which unlocks stuff, and this is just a faster way to get those supply drops. This is where you can buy the supply drops, basically. So, and cashing them in for points. $2 gets you 200 points, 10 for 1,000, plus 100 for bonus, 20 for 2,000, so on and so forth. So, there is a way to earn supply drops also is by trading in crypto keys, which you get from playing the game. The entire range of new items can be obtained by simply playing the game and trading the crypto keys you earn for supply drops in the black market. So you can earn them in game, which is good. But like you said, it's also bad that you don't want people just tossing money into a game and then possibly doing like their other franchise that Activision's doing, which is Destiny. Oh, yay, God. Destiny microtransactions. More of them, because the silver that we had to start paying in, it was October, that we got like new dance moves and emotes and stuff like that. Now they're offering packs on, right now, only on Xbox Live for some strange reason, since Destiny is a PlayStation, PlayStation poster boy, basically. You usually see stuff on PlayStation first for Destiny than you see on Xbox. But right now, it's Xbox right now, on it first. You get the ability to level up your character to level 25, boost your subclass of said character, I believe, or a character of your choosing, and also get telemetry, which allows you to level up weapons faster. A lot of people just have and me included, have a serious problem with this because it's not leveling up. It's not leveling you up to max level anyway. First off, it's barely getting you past halfway, and halfway doesn't even take you but maybe a couple hours of playing in Destiny. So, and the sheer fact that you're paying $30 for this as well. So you're paying for what could be the price of the Taken King Destiny DLC, which came with one of those little things, too, that you could level up a character to 25 with it. So the boost in subclass is not worth it, and the telemetry, you can actually get it in-game with the currency that is provided in Destiny for you. So $30 to halfway level up your character, kind of level up its subclass, and give you something that can level up your guns a little bit faster instead of just putting in a couple hours work just seems ridiculous.
This is crazy.
I mean, and this is what we're getting instead of new DLC. They're focusing more on events and stuff like that and using these microtransactions to pay for such things. So instead of paid DLC, we're getting microtransactions. And I, for one, would rather see the big, like, DLC story missions and stuff like that instead of the events such as Sparrow Racing, which got boring after, like, 2 days of playing it.
Wait a minute. We are getting paid DLC, though, right? Isn't that what The Taken King is?
I mean, that's what The Taken King was. Yeah, right. But Taken King's been out for a little while. I want to see something different. Like, I mean, they're not doing any more paid DLC until Destiny 2.
They better be doing free DLC at this point.
And well, the free DLC that they're doing has been things like the Halloween event and the Sparrow Racing. You know, little distractions. It hasn't been like full fledged story missions, new like dungeons to crawl, new raids or anything like that. We may see those down the line, but right now it doesn't look like it's headed that way. It looks like it's just tiny stuff.
Again, this is making Halo 5 look like the golden goose. I mean, this is crazy.
Maybe that's Bungie's intention. Make its old game look better.
$25 to $30 to halfway level up your character and your weapons.
Yeah.
I thought that's what playing the game was for.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, its telemetry only lasts an hour.
This is a game that reportedly recovered its $500 million budget on launch day alone. So if their budget was $500 million and they beat that on launch day, everything since then, from the season passes to the Taken King to the animations that were, what, $10 to this, is just pure, pure Activision profit. Oh my God, this makes me sick to my stomach.
Hey, you gotta love microtransactions.
I just can't believe this is what a Bungie game has turned into. You know, like, I mean, obviously, we've talked about this before. This is not Bungie of 10 years ago, obviously.
Obviously.
I have to feel that this is Activision stepping in. Do you think that? Do you think Bungie's sitting there like, yeah, we'll totally just rape our customers' wallets? Or do you think this is Activision saying, hey, let's slip this in there and see who bites?
I almost think it's... Well, I'd have to say it's more Bungie than Activision, because Bungie's the one that is the one that's going to develop the DLC for the game, not Activision. And their choice of not doing DLC and doing microtransactions instead for little events and stuff would be their decision. I mean, maybe they're doing it because, like I said, they're probably focusing on Destiny 2 instead of trying to focus on more paid DLC for Destiny 2.0 or 1, you know, Destiny, OG Destiny. So, I mean, that's the only thing I could think of. I don't know why else... Because, I mean, if this was Activision's thing, Activision's known for this type of deal anyway. With certain games, there are microtransactions in certain Activision games. So, I really don't know. I mean, I would like to think that it's Activision, but I'm almost thinking that it's Bungie more than anything. It might be a combination of the two.
I can hear the argument already that MMOs have been doing this for a long time. I think... Every instance that I've ever heard of an MMO doing this, number one is if you buy, I know WoW does this quite a bit. If you buy the new expansion, you typically get maybe an extra character slot as well as a boost to max level. I think they do something like that. Old Republic did that with their latest, which I've been meaning to go back and try, their latest massive quote unquote single player experience in the Old Republic. They did that as well. If you bought that expansion pack, you got a character slot, but I know you got your character boosted for free. But the other way, most prevalent way I've seen this in MMOs is you can buy a experience gain booster in games like Terra or even in Old Republic. You might be able to in WoW, Troy, you'd know that answer better than I would. But those types of boosters are still asking you to play the game, and part of the reason, I think, is because those games get so complicated the further down you go and the further you progress into the game, you have to learn to play your class at each level and going forward. If you're a new person jumping into Destiny, and maybe this isn't the case, but if you're a new person and you jump in and go, yeah, sure, I'll boost myself to 25, you're probably going to be terrible because you don't understand what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I guess the only good thing that comes out of that is that they're boosting you to the point where you can actually do the Taken King content. Because $25. Yeah, I know. I mean, but it's the lowest level that you can be to play some of the Taken King content. So,
is this does this include the $10 Racing League record book?
Well, they patched that, but no, it doesn't include that. They patched that problem that they had in there where people were just going in and previewing the thing and able to check mark the things that they've done in the game instead of actually buying the book. So
if you people are confused, that is another microtransaction that allows you to record records of your races in the free Racing Sparrow League, and it costs you 10 real dollars, or I guess whatever the silver currency is in the game. But yeah, it costs basically $10 in order to get this record book, which is the book that I guess holds your records in the free racing event. It's absurd. This is completely absurd, this whole thing. I can't believe this has happened to Destiny.
I can kind of believe it, but...
how does this make you feel as a long-time Destiny player?
I wasn't a long-time Destiny player. I just recently started playing it since when Taken King came out. But I'm not entirely heartbroken about it. It'd be interesting to see if there's going to be a lot of new people coming on there because of this boost, or if people are going to ignore it, you know, maybe not even worry about it. They'll just go ahead and do it the old fashioned way. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not entirely upset about it. I'm not going to be mad about it or anything like that, but I can see other people that have been putting in a lot of hard work since Destiny came out to, you know, day one, and seeing people pop in there and be level 25 when they're first time playing it. And it's like, well, great. Now we've got a bunch of people that we have to carry in this game because they have no idea what they're doing.
Would you be okay if every game going forward in the similar vein to Destiny was like this?
No, of course not. Why would anybody like to have a game that will just let you buy? It's like character selling in WoW and in other MMOs, basically. It's like letting someone else do all the hard work and you just buy the character from them. It's ridiculous. It messes up the flow of the game for a lot of people because you're thinking that you're going to get into a game with people that actually know what they're doing, and they don't know what they're doing because they just recently purchased this character, basically. You know, and I don't know about you, but I don't like having people that don't know what they're doing playing a game with me. So, you know, unless we all don't know what we're doing, it's not fun at all.
Well, I can assure everyone who listens to this show that I will never try Destiny after this. Not that I was really going to. Okay, I take that back. I have tried Destiny when they did the free beta thing. I think it's actually still, it's not a beta, free demo on Xbox Live, which I think is still there if anybody's curious. And I think it's on PlayStation 4 as well. You can basically play up to level 8 or something like that. I mentioned it a few times, but after hearing stuff like this, yeah, it pretty much nails the coffin shut. This is not a game I ever want to try and get into. Obviously, if Destiny 2 comes out and it's a much more refined, you know, story-driven experience, the Grimoire cards are gone, most of these microtransactions are not there, something along those lines, certainly that would change my mind. But what they're doing now is not getting my favor at all. And I'm sure there are plenty of other people who are going to defend this game and say, well, it doesn't bother me, I'm not paying money for those microtransactions, yada, yada, yada. But this is certainly not the type of game that me personally, I would be willing to throw money at. And it's really upsetting too, because of Black Ops 3. I kind of feel bad now that I paid money for that game as well, because again, that would be something, I mean, we're like, nope, not touching that game. But I mean, that was a solid game. I just hate to see these developers, these publishers, maybe more so, turning these games into these cash cows like this, just trying to take advantage of maybe gamers who are lazy or gamers who don't really want to spend that much more money. And perhaps those of us who can't spend that much more money are likely to be hurt by such practices. So I hope that goes away, but it doesn't unfortunately look like that's going away anytime soon. So that's a bummer, but I think you're right. I think, you know, I shouldn't let it bother me. You're not going to let it bother you. It's something that sucks. It's been going on for a while, and I don't really see an end in it, but I hope this goes away. I hope they catch a lot of backlash. One good thing about Bungie is it does look like they, for the most part, try to listen to their fan base, and their fan base has been pretty vocal about some things they didn't like in the past, and Bungie has righted the ship, so there's a good chance that, you know, maybe this will blow up and, you know, Bungie will actually listen and maybe they can change, or not, they don't even have to change anything. My thing is just give the player something for free, you know, like what Halo did, said, okay, fine, if you want all 50 helmets, you got to pay us some real dough, or you got to play for 500 hours. But the benefit to that is you get, look at all these map packs we're going to give you guys that we traditionally have charged, you know, $15 for. We're going to give them to you for free. So I really like that. And I've said it before that thing, that deal with Halo was, I think, pretty positive and overall possibly, you know, much more acceptable form of microtransactions for a paid game. But yeah, this stuff, this Destiny, this Activision stuff is, I think it's pretty bogus. But hey, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What else? You got anything else that was close to your top one?
Not really. I mean, besides the, I guess this news was that today Nintendo had their little Smash Brothers conference, basically, with their Nintendo Direct, and announced a couple more characters for Smash Brothers. I think these are the final characters for Smash Brothers right now. You know, I guess unless they do some more DLC. But you got Cloud. That was announced a couple weeks ago that Cloud was going to be joining, but now it's official. Cloud is actually in Smash Brothers now. A character from Fire Emblem. Two Mii fighters dressed up as Tails and Knuckles from Sonic. And their final actual character is Bayonetta, which is kind of surprising and kind of not, considering that Bayonetta 2 only came out on the Wii U platform.
Right.
While Bayonetta 1 was multi-platform, you know, this is, it's interesting to see. It's like, oh, well, you know, she actually fits in that universe of crazy fighting. So why not? Why not add Bayonetta to this game? So it's an interesting thing to see. Bayonetta and Cloud in a Nintendo game fighting each other.
That goes on top of, was it Ryu? Ryu is in there as well?
Yeah, Ryu's in there as well. And not to mention, Ryu and Bayonetta are also getting amiibos. So Ryu, Bayonetta, and Cloud are getting amiibos. So, hey, well, for all those people that like to collect those amiibos, you get a couple more coming to you.
Wait, so you get amiibos for Cloud?
Yeah, you'll get an amiibo for Cloud.
Holy cow.
There's a Cloud amiibo, yeah.
That thing's going to be rare.
It depends on how it looks, probably.
I could totally see that conversation with Nintendo and Square Enix, where the Nintendo's like, yeah, we'll give you 50% of the profit on these amiibos. And they show them the numbers of how quickly amiibos are selling out everywhere. I'm sure Square Enix was like, yep, okay, done. Wow.
Yeah, I think they'll be more than satisfied with whatever percentage they get.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Let's see, on the top of my change log, something that's a little kind of out of left field, but still fairly predictable at the same time. I really, really wanted to, I kept going back to this report of Kojima leaving officially Konami, which I'll talk about that in a second. But there was something else that kind of got my attention just a little bit more, and it made me a little puzzled. I wasn't quite sure how to take this. I'm not sure what's going on. And the news that I'm referring to is there were a number of different sources that released these numbers. But the source that I received it from was Forbes.com. And essentially they're going over the NPD numbers for November. And if you look, I don't like to get on to console wars on this podcast. I really like how we keep it mostly fair and, you know, no bias on here. But it's crazy to me to see that the PS4 just decimated Xbox One in terms of sales for the month of November, when you have huge releases on Xbox One like Halo 5, the first major Halo game for this new console, and Rise of the Tomb Raider, which that is like another story in itself. The sales numbers for that game are just depressing, because that game is so fantastic. And I was looking at this stuff and going, what the heck does Microsoft have to do? I'm sure they shelled out millions for this Rise of the Tomb Raider exclusivity deal, and a game that so many people loved? Are gamers really just saying, nope, I'll wait for PC, and more importantly, I'll wait for PS4 over a year away? And are people really saying, I'm sick of Halo? Maybe they are. I don't know. This is what's baffling to me, because you and I have talked, Troy, that PlayStation 4 had nothing. They had nothing going on for them. And the bundles for Black Friday for Xbox One were superb. You had Dell giving away a 500 gigabyte Xbox One with, I think, three games, one of which was Fallout 4, and an extra controller for $300. I mean, the bundles were insane. I mean, PlayStation 4 had some solid bundles. I picked one up. It was just one game. It was the Uncharted collection, usually, or you could get Battlefront, which, I would have never done that. But the bundles for Xbox One were incredible, and I still cannot believe that this console is not selling that well, especially in the month of November, which is right on the edge of the release for Halo 5 and has Rise of the Tomb Raider sitting there. I mean, it's just they even have Forza, which Forza isn't new. Obviously, that game came out a couple of months ago. But it's like Xbox had something for everybody. They had racing, they had the adventure game, they had the shooter, and they're still getting killed. It blows my mind how this is going on right now. I read this and was like, yeah, what does Microsoft have to do? I don't understand. They cut the price, they have the bundles, they have the games, and these are good games. Rise of the Tomb Raider maybe should be game of the year. I mean, that's certainly up for debate, and you could make a case for that. But man, I don't know what Microsoft is going to have to do. If they didn't do it, if they couldn't beat PlayStation this year, I mean, what are they going to do next year? They had Halo and Rise of the Tomb Raider this year. That's a steep hill to climb. If they couldn't win the month of November. And obviously, there's still December, and if you want to talk about Tomb Raider, Microsoft was saying, and I think Square Enix as well, because I think they're the publisher, they were saying they are hopeful this game will sell more into the holidays. And I know Nintendo and I believe Microsoft have both said they're keeping most of their bundles, if not their price tags, for the $299 price tag and Wii U, the $249 price tag, through to the holidays. But boy, oh boy. This is a fascinating case study, this whole generation of consoles coming out. It's just some weird stuff going on. Traditionally, and I'm pretty good with my video game history, traditionally it has not been the console that is more powerful. It has not been the console that is cheaper. It's been the console with the better games, period, that wins the generation. And this year, I don't think it was much of a contest. The best games were on Xbox One, and they still can't win. I don't know what to do. I don't know what Phil Spencer and Microsoft should do at this point. What are your thoughts on this, Troy?
Well, you got to think of it like this also. A lot of people don't have that disposable income.
Sure.
I would think that a lot of people probably bought a PS4, back when they first both came out, because PS4 was cheaper. And it is a more powerful system than the Xbox One. So those people that are, people right now, and this past month, you probably had a bunch of people buying the bundles for Xbox One for people that don't have either console. Let me get the Xbox One. It's offering more games and all this other stuff.
Sure.
But at the same time, you also have people that have heard the word of mouth. It's like, oh no, you'd probably be better off getting a PS4. You got a lot more people that have friends that have a PS4 as well. Might as well get a PS4 too, so I can play with them. Because the weakest thing that Sony had for them was their ability to play with people in games and communicate with people in games. I mean, PS3 was not, well, actually PS2 wasn't strong, and PS3 was a little bit better, but it seems like they've gotten it down by PS4. So it Yes. seems to be a better, it seems to be a better game to play with other people and party up with people, along with a more powerful system as well. They offer better graphics in the Xbox One. So that could hamper a lot of people that actually are able to buy their own system to go with a PS4 instead of an Xbox One. Now, the Tomb Raider thing, I'm thinking it is just Tomb Raider just got released at the wrong time. You had Call of Duty, you had Star Wars, you had a bunch of games going up against each other at that one time, and okay, if you wanted a good single player experience, well, if you wanted a good single player experience for most people, it would have been Fallout 4 because, hey, I can get this on my PS4, I can get this on my Xbox One, I can get this on my PC. I can play this on any system I want, so I might as well stick with Fallout 4. A lot of people that wanted to get Tomb Raider on like their Xbox One would probably have to choose between Fallout 4 or Tomb Raider, right? Unless you were lucky enough to get both, if you decided to save enough money to get both, which it only, I mean, I was able to get both, but I was able to, I planned my money out. There are people sure. that, you know, review video games, they're able to get both of them because they get them for free or they get paid enough that they can actually afford to get one of them if they get the other one as a review copy or something like that. So, it's just, it came out in the wrong time. There were aspects for single player with Fallout 4, and since Tomb Raider didn't have multiplayer, you could have gotten either Star Wars or Black Ops and gotten your multiplayer fix. You know, and then there are people that are still trying to go through some of these games that they have on their shelves, like Witcher 3. Or maybe trying to get through that Batman DLC, you know, not
the Phantom Pain.
That you did have to deal with that as well. There are a lot of games that had a lot of longevity out there that, you know, Tomb Raider is one of those ones where it's like, oh, I'll get Tomb Raider when the price drops or something like that. You know, if it's cheaper, I'll go and get it and stuff like that, because it's not one of those games that you're actively worried about getting spoiled upon, you know. You got to know a lot of people that are going to get Tomb Raider and tell you the story about it and be like, oh, no, 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 don't tell me. With things like Fallout and Metal Gear Solid, you got people doing walkthroughs and playthroughs and stuff like that. It's like, well, okay, they're having a lot of fun with this game. Let me get it too. And then I won't be spoiled by what's in the game either by watching these people play it, because I'll be playing it with them. So it's just the bad luck of the draw when it comes to Tomb Raider. I can say the same thing for things like Rainbow Six, maybe Yakuza 5, because that just got released this past Tuesday or the Tuesday before that. Just, it's bad timing.
I think you hit the nail on the head with Fallout, because I've been thinking about that a lot as well. And you know what's crazy? Because when you first start looking at this and you see Fallout as well as the other games, I mean, let's be honest, there's a lot of really high caliber games that came out around that time, not just on the same day as Rise of the Tomb Raider. There were a lot of high caliber games coming out, so you're right, I think people had to definitely, you know, plan out their money appropriately. And a lot of them, I know many people actually who were like, yeah, I'll go pick up Tomb Raider later because I want to dive mostly into Fallout, or I'm still playing Halo, or I want to play zombies on Call of Duty, or, you know, I'm really jazzed to be playing Battlefront because I really enjoyed the beta. So I 100% agree with that. But what's got me like almost laughing here, you think when you hear about this, you think, well, Microsoft, they should have seen this coming, right? When they bought the exclusivity. But I don't think most of these games were announced when that exclusive deal dropped, and especially not the big elephant in the room, Fallout 4. Because that was announced just at, it was E3, right? I think it was in E3 in June that they had the Bethesda conference first, and the guy got up there on stage, the lead developer or whatever, and was like, yeah, Fallout 4 is coming out this fall, this November or whatever.
Yeah.
Now that I look back on that, I wonder if Microsoft was sitting there like, crap, you know, just totally seeing these Rise of the Tomb Raider sales. Or at least Rise of the Tomb Raider sales at $60 plummet, because people would be skipping that game at least for a little while. That's a big bummer, I think. Man, that sucks to Microsoft. And again, I don't think they could have seen Fallout 4 coming. Maybe they had a close ties with Bethesda, but I don't think so. Maybe not enough. I don't think Bethesda was really announcing it, but I mean, who knows?
And I mean, they may have also thought that, okay, well, Bethesda's going to bring out Fallout 4. We'll just be the counter programming to that game and just put out Tomb Raider at the same time. And maybe they're thinking they could take that hit. You know, it may, even though the sales aren't as great as they want it to be, maybe it's not as big of a hit for them as they, you know, as we're speculating it would be for them. Like, we didn't think it, maybe we're thinking that, oh, great, it didn't sell well. This is a big problem for Microsoft. Maybe they just thought, it's not that big of a problem. You know, it's a problem, but at the same time, we knew we were going to take a hit by coming up face-to-face with the big hitter of Fallout 4. So maybe they planned for not making the money back on that. You know, I guess it's one of those things that if we do see another sequel to Tomb Raider, will we see another exclusive deal from Microsoft, or will they just not worry about it? Because if they don't, if it's one of those things where it actually planned out, paid out for them as well as they thought it was going to pay out, they'll probably do it again. But if it didn't, when we'll just see Tomb Raider, the third one, come out on all platforms at the same time, unless Sony makes a deal for them or something. So
I got a feeling that's what's going to happen. I think Microsoft originally designed this so they could go toe-to-toe with Uncharted on their box. Uncharted, obviously, we saw Sony pull that much earlier in the year and push it into next year, 2016. And I think Microsoft was kind of like, oh, well, then that we got no competition this year. And then, boom, Fallout drops. And Battlefield's coming out, and Call of Duty and everything. And I think maybe they got a little overwhelmed by all that. And I think the sales numbers definitely show it. I think Tomb Raider, it's just a damn shame, because that is a fantastic game. And looking back now, that game really should have been my number two, because I'm almost completely removed from Fallout. I desire to go back and play that game, but it is at like the bottom of my list, not because I think it's a bad game. I've spoken very highly of that game, but man, is it a chore. And there are other things that are pulling my attention, and there's not much quite like Tomb Raider, in my opinion, or at least Rise of the Tomb Raider. Obviously, I thought the first one was really good, the remake, but man, that game is pretty solid. So the other thing I wanted to just very briefly touch on was the Kojima news, and that's what I kind of talked about for a second before I led into the PS4, Xbox One sales, and that was that Kojima has officially left, I should say supposedly officially left, because I don't think it's 100% true, I think it's mostly true, and what we're hearing is that Kojima has left Konami and is in talks with Sony to form a new studio. I think it's more he's forming a new studio and is in talks with Sony about probably exclusivity. I don't think this is the way I interpret it. It didn't seem like this was Kojima starting a Sony owned studio. This was more like Kojima is probably much more comfortable with the people that work with Sony, because he's made games for their platforms for many years. And it's only been recently that those games started appearing not only on PCs, but also on Xboxes. So I think Kojima was probably, you know, I want to do my own studio, and I'm comfortable with PlayStation and Sony. Let's see what kind of games they might be interested in that I have in my mind, and if they could help co-finance those games. So I don't know about you. Did you read this as a Sony-owned studio, Troy, or kind of the same thing when I'm drawing?
We'll think about the same thing. It's more of him trying to get the exclusivity on the PS4 or whatever Sony's going to have up their sleeve by the time he makes another game, and just staying on them. Maybe the game not being on the console forever. Maybe it'll get moved like some of the other titles that he has that have been moved before. So I would see him going onto Sony for the first year or two, and then, okay, you can put my game out on the other system, that's fine. But yeah, it's more of an exclusivity deal with Sony than a Sony owned and Kojima run production studio.
Okay. I'm glad you kind of read that the same way, because I can totally see how people would read it. Great. Kojima is going to form a studio underneath the umbrella of Sony. I just don't think that's what I read. It looks like Kojima's not the wealthiest man in the world. And while I think there's probably lots of publishers who want to pay him money to make a video game, like I said, he probably is just mostly comfortable with Sony, and he probably does need help funding whatever game he wants to work on next. And I mean, Sony has a very, very strong relationship with the Japanese industry and with the Japanese gamers. And that is essentially what Kojima is. He's a Japanese game developer. So I think this is something that'll probably be just for the beginning, kind of like what you said. Maybe not, here's my next game, it's on PlayStation or a Sony platform, because that was part of the description. It was Sony platform. So, I mean, he could totally be making a Vita game. We don't know. I doubt that's the case. But this could be, I think, more than likely a game that comes out. It's only on a PlayStation console. And then the next game, since he has credibility with his new studio and because he has sales figures and revenue at that point, we could likely see future games coming out for the Microsoft platforms. But I think you hit an interesting point there. This is going to be a while before we see a game from this guy. We're going into year three with these new consoles. So I wouldn't expect a game out of this guy and his studio until late 2017 as like initial showing of this game, and possibly not a release till 2018 if I had to guess. So more than likely, people will be playing Final Fantasy VII Remake and The Last Guardian and Shenmue 3 before you play Hideo Kojima's next game. That's just my guess. What do you think?
It's a good guess. Like, I don't think he'll have anything in the chamber right now. Maybe he's got some stories for something else in his head right now. I mean, who really knows? Only he knows. And I'd have to also throw in that he's probably tired of working under people.
Yeah.
So he might just want to, you know, so that's another reason why he might not just have a Sony-owned production studio that he just helps run. He probably just wants to own his own business and not have to answer to anybody else about, you know, you shouldn't do that or you shouldn't do that. Let's add this in there. You know, he wants to do his own thing. So what better way of doing that than to start your own production company and, you know, just be like, hey, Sony, I got my own production studio. I'm going to be running it. You know, I want my game to show up on your system first. So I'm just going to offer you this deal of, hey, you can get exclusive rights to my game for about a year or two, and it's open season. And if you want, you can. If you don't, then I'll just go to somebody else. But I'm thinking he's just going to try and work for himself.
I could totally see that, especially given the reports that we saw regarding the work conditions for people at Konami working on this game, not necessarily at the you know, mercy of Kojima himself, but certainly there were some pretty alarming things coming out that they were almost like slave workers. They were slave labor, essentially, that they were developers who were just being forced to stay there day in and day out in order to get things like the PC release pre-polished. So hopefully that's exactly what is happening, or what you said is exactly what's happening with Kojima. He wants his own studio so he can treat his employees better and that kind of thing. And he wants a little help funding his next game. Man, he should really go to Kickstarter. I wonder if that would ever, if he could get something. Maybe he will go to Kickstarter, since Sony likes to do that with their games now. I'm looking at Shenmue 3, because we all know they gave Shenmue 3 some of their own money to get that, hey, this game's coming to PlayStation, star other platforms as well. I know what's going on there. All right, I think that's just about it for the changelog and the news in the gaming industry. So we'll cut right over to our Game Queue. Game Queue is a part of the show where we talk about what we've been playing, obviously, what is in our queue, and what is at the top of our queue. It can be new games, it can be old games. Troy, you been playing more Rainbow Six?
Kind of just been playing a game here or there of that. When the Destiny Sparrow Racing came out, I was like, oh, let me give it a shot. And it's okay. It's a mild distraction. It can be buggy as all hell, especially that first day that it came out. I guess a lot of people were all sitting there trying to download it at the same time and stuff. And I think Destiny's servers may have crashed that day as well. I think there were some server problems on the Xbox One. It was either that or Xbox Live was having some problems. No, it was Destiny. It was Destiny having problems that day. So it's fun, but it's only fun with like a bunch of, it's only six people racing. So it's the perfect amount of people that you want to have in a party while you're racing. So you can, if you party up with six people and you get on a party, it's fun to just trash talk each other and stuff like that. So there's that bit of, it's that kind of fun. It's only fun for a little bit. And then after that, it's like, okay, let's do something else. But what I've been sinking my teeth into, and it's I'm going back and playing a game, and it's actually Life is Strange.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm up to episode 3 of Life is Strange. I think I'm almost done with episode 3 of Life is Strange.
I want
to
know about this because I played and my fiance played most of, as in we both played most of episode 1. And I don't remember why I stopped. I think something else must have come up more than likely. And maybe I bought it for her and I decided to try it and I didn't play it that long. I don't remember. I know I did not finish it, but I was very interested in the whole... It's time control, essentially, right? Is your ability in the beginning? Obviously, there it could change, but from what I remember, you control kind of like time in the beginning?
Yeah, it hasn't changed. Okay. Yeah, our lead character, Max, is able to rewind time.
And it's kind of in the vein of... I don't want to really say this because it may give it a negative connotation, but it is...
You're going to say it's a Telltale game, aren't you?
It's similar to a Telltale game simply because it's episodic and it's a touch cartoony. Maybe it's a lot cartoony. I don't know what... I don't want to say it's like Cartoon Network cartoony, but it definitely has that artistic cartoony design to it. But there's still... it's very believable characters and...
Yeah.
I don't remember it being bad. I remember kind of enjoying it and thinking this is really interesting. So tell me up to episode 3, what do you think about it?
It's not bad. I do like it and enjoy it. The story is very interesting. Just a normal 18-year-old girl ends up with the power to rewind time. It's just an interesting, it's interesting to see how you can mess with time in this game. It's like, oh, I made the wrong decision. Let me go back in time and fix that. There are certain limits to her power. More than anything, it'll actually just do it in game, like through a cutscene or something. It'll show like, she can't use her power now. So what are you going to do? So, that doesn't happen as often as you would think. And you can only rewind time to maybe about 5 or 10 minutes in game time, 5 or 10 minutes. So it's not like you can rewind your whole day and start from the beginning. So, but it is interesting. There is no uncanny valley with this game. It does look good, but the people aren't looking so good that you're having a hard time believing that it's not a real person and you're playing a game or vice versa.
Right. It's not Heavy Rain or something, right?
Yeah. You know, you're playing a game.
Did you get this on PC?
Yeah. No, I got it on PC. Of course I got it on PC. let's see. It is very indie game. Well, indie movie the game. It is a very indie movie game. Like, if you know any indie movies or hipster, or if you know hipster people, this is the video game that it's basically about them. You know, you got a girl that just listens to indie pop music, basically. She's always walking around with her camera to take photos and stuff like that. So if you don't like any of that stuff, this is not the game for you. But if you can get past that part, then you'll find a very enjoyable game that has some moments that have you scratching your head like, really, what's going on here? Like, there's a mystery in this game that's got me fairly intrigued. So I've really been trying to do like maybe an episode a day or half an episode or something like that. Try and get through as much as I can and see if I can finish it out, because it was one of those games that I had to put on the back burner because, like you said, a lot of different things were coming out at that time too. And then it was also an episodic game, so you kind of want them to finish all the episodes before you complete the game. Or at least that's my thinking of it. I might go ahead and buy the episodic content, but I'll wait until they're finished. Like with the Minecraft story mode that Telltale is putting out, that ends next month, I believe, in January. And this is one of the fastest Telltale games that's come out. I think it came out in like September, and it's already up to episode 4, or it's going to be up to episode 4 this month, and then the last episode next month. So it's like, really?
That's how it should be.
Yeah, I know this is how it should be, but why is it like this now is what I'm wondering. But maybe they've been working on this Minecraft one for a while. But this one And this is also from Square Enix as well. So it's an interesting take from Square Enix on an episodic game that I hopefully I'm not going to be disappointed in at the end. You know, right now I'm enjoying it, but I'm hoping that it doesn't just flop at the end. It's like, oh, well, I don't want them to ever do episodic content again, which we could get with Final Fantasy VII. And I forgot to ask this last month. I mean, last week when we recorded, how would you feel if, okay, Final Fantasy VII would be episodic. How would you feel if you had to pay $60 for each episode?
Oh boy, that is a fantastic question. To be honest, I have no idea what I would do because I think it would have to come down to
how long each section would be.
Yeah, yeah, and like how much is really behind this $60 paywall, and how many? Like if they were like, yeah, it's $60 per episode, but there's only going to be three, and they're going to come out once a year. Okay, maybe that's a little more digestible. Yeah, yeah, similar to 13. However, if they came out and said this is a six-part series, and each one is going to be $50, and they're going to come out every 6 months, no, they can kiss my ass. I'll wait till a complete package deal on sale for like $100, maybe. Then I would consider it. So I think, yeah, it's definitely circumstantial, but on first news of that, I wouldn't be too happy about it. No, no. I don't like the episodic content stuff unless it is, like you said, all done and all complete. I don't mind the style, you know, playing episode one and then you see last time at episode one and then boom, you start episode two. Like, I think that's actually really unique and interesting and I enjoy that. But like you said, I don't like getting episode one and then waiting a month or 6 months or however it is for a Telltale game and then having to go back and play episode two and being completely lost. I don't like that, and I certainly don't like paying $60 per episode. That would just be ridiculous. But like you said, if you're talking about one episode or the first part is like a 40 to 60 hour long game with fully voiced dialogue, active combat system, many, many, many Square Enix, aka almost lifelike Japanese style CGI cutscenes, then yeah, I would probably be okay with that, but. Yeah, at first news, I would not be happy with it. I don't think.
Me neither. I mean, I was just thinking to myself when it comes to these episodic games, it's like I'd much rather get it all in one chunk, and hopefully it doesn't take too long to get that chunk done for them. But it is it's almost like I'm pre-ordering a game that's slowly coming out. I eventually will be able to finish it and play it, but I just have to wait for it to come out. And I don't mind that too much, but there's a certain line that you can't cross if you want me to buy that game.
Did you buy Life is Strange as like a complete pack as all five episodes together?
No, actually I think I either bought the first episode when it was like on sale or something. I think it was like on sale. And I wanted to see how it was because it was a new studio doing it. It had an interesting premise, but I wanted to see how it was going to play out. And after that first episode, I was like, okay, no, this isn't bad. I'm going to go ahead and tack on the extra $20, I think, or 15, $20 it was to get episodes 2 through 5 and finish it out, you know. I was going to actually do it each episode, but think other games got in the way, so I couldn't do it each episode. So I'm glad I waited long enough so that the whole thing came out, and now I can just go ahead and play the whole thing without having to worry about waiting for an episode the following month or so.
It looks like on Steam right now, the complete package for all five episodes is $20, and it looks like it's coming to Xbox One and PS4 soon. Looks like they might have a limited edition and a non-limited edition. And limited edition looks like it's going to be $40. What exactly is in the limited edition? I'm not sure, but the regular edition looks like it's going to be $30. I think that's a respectable price for five episodes. How long is each episode? Can you kind of guess, round up?
I could probably say that each episode's about 2.5 to 3 hours, maybe. Episode 2 seemed a little short, and episode 3 seemed a little bit longer. So it's varying between episodes, but yeah, about 2 to 3 hours. It's definitely not an hour blaze through, because this girl does not move fast.
So you're looking at maybe roughly ballpark 13 to 15 hour game for $20 for maybe $30, depending on where you got it, what kind of sales you got. Heck, even maybe even less than $20, depending if you can get it on sale. So plus it's kind of an artistic game. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of different. And I think that one, in that particular instance, that case study there, I think that's a pretty good deal for that type of game to be only, how does that compare to Telltale games like Tales of the Borderlands, the Walking Dead series? Are they generally around $20 to $30?
Yeah, for the most part. Like, they may be a little bit more when they first come out, but yeah, about $20 for the whole thing. It's not unusual. $25 mostly being the base. So $25 to $30 usually being the base amount for those games when they first come out. And then they may drop down to $20. And they'll do their little specials. If you buy the first episode, they may give you the next 4 or 5 episodes at a discounted price as well. So,
let me ask you this: how many crashes have you had?
None.
Oh,
yeah, I haven't had any crashes or anything like that.
How many crashes do you have on average with a Telltale game?
Actually, I haven't had any of those happen in a long time. I think the last time a crash happened, I was playing Walking Dead Season 2, I think, maybe. It was either that, or it might have been Wolf Among Us that made... No, actually, neither one of them had a crash.
Didn't you lose a save for one of them?
I lost the save for both, for both Game of Thrones and Tales from the Borderlands. I don't know what was up with that. I don't know if it was because of my computer, or if I don't know if it was because of just them not saving properly or not. So it might have been what I had the saves on. It might have just got corrupted or something like that. So I can't really blame them for that. The only thing I can really say about Life is Strange that really bothers me is the mouths on the people. Like, it goes complete kung fu movie, and the mouth is moving and the stuff is not matching up with the mouth, or vice versa. It's like, oh, that's really annoying when I'm paying attention to that. I need to stop paying attention to that because it's going to drive me insane.
And then can't stop.
Yeah, exactly. But the rest of it's not bad. The music, like I said, it's not too bad if you're not, as long as you don't mind the indie stuff. Like I said, it's very interesting. And hopefully it does not flop at the end. That's all I'm hoping for. It's just like, come on, please end all right.
Do you have the other episodes like downloaded or purchased or anything? Or
oh yeah, everything's already downloaded and everything.
Okay, so you'll probably be getting to those here soon.
Yeah, I mean, that's the good thing with Steam. It's like whenever a new episode comes out for one of those episodic titles, it'll just download like an update for the game. So when I was playing something else or something like that, Steam always would download the newest episode for Life is Strange, so all that's already up there. All I have to do is just, whenever the credits roll in the other one, just skip the credits and go ahead and hit continue to play the next episode. So, yeah, like I said, it's not bad.
That's good. I'm glad you got a chance to play that, because that's something that's been on the back of my mind and in my Steam queue, actually, for a while. I've been wanting to get back to that because, like I said, I don't remember it being bad, and I remember thinking, I like that this is different from a Telltale game. And I like the setting. I liked the ability to control time. Ever since probably Braid, I've really been fascinated by that. And people will probably give me hell because I understand Prince of Persia. I get it. But Braid, I think, really did it to where I was like, this is awesome. So, yeah, I'm definitely planning to go check that out. And for $20, 5 episodes, you can't really beat that. And I'm sure at some point it's going to go on sale too, especially after these console editions come out. I have been playing a firestorm of games. Not exactly. I'm going to run through this list again. I did it last week, and I'm going to be trying to be as quick as I can with most of them because I haven't put a lot of time into most of them. All these games I got when I got my PS4 for Black Friday, And I kind of went on a binge because there were Black Friday deals on games all over the place. So I hope people listening were able to pick up some good deals. That list includes Killzone, Infamous Second Son. I should specify it's Killzone for PS4, obviously. I think it's Shadow Fight or Shadow Liars or Shadow People. I don't know what it's called. Infamous Second Son, Magicka 2, Until Dawn, Rocket League, The Order 1886, DC Universe Online, Surgeon Simulator, Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 remasters in the Uncharted Collection. I'm not going to call it Nathan Drake Collection. And then lastly, the multiplayer beta for Uncharted 4 ended. I won't talk about that because I talked about that a little bit on the show last week. So if anybody's interested in how that went, you can check that out in the previous episode. But just, I'll run through that list and give a brief description now real quick. Killzone, I'm pretty sure that's what 343 decided to copy when they were laying out the groundwork for Halo 5. And obviously Halo 5, I think, has a much tighter story to tell. And I haven't played Halo 5 in particular story, but I can guarantee you it's probably better than Killzone. Their co-op, if anybody's interested, they do have a co-op mode. You got to pay extra money for it. So even though the game was on sale for $9.99 at GameStop and just about everywhere else, if you want to play co-op, you got to pay extra money because that was DLC, which was ridiculous and probably why I haven't put the game back in. But it's, as a shooter, it's solid. It's pretty. It's just not very interesting. The world's just kind of dead. It's kind of been the problem for Killzone for a long time. And unfortunately, I really shouldn't say unfortunately. I got it for $10. So, I mean, I'll play it eventually when I don't have anything left. The Order 1886, aka Rise for Xbox One, and that's R-Y-S-E, not Rise like the Tomb Raider. The Order 1886 is, you take Rise and Uncharted and put them together. That's what it is. It's a tech showcase. There is a interesting and deep story. It's a really fascinating story, everything that's going on in this world, and it is super pretty, but so was Rise, Son of Rome. The problem with both of those games is that there's not a lot of gameplay. The gameplay in this game in particular, The Order, tries to mimic Uncharted, but it just lacks the bombastic, the attitude, the charisma, all the stuff that makes Nathan Drake in the Uncharted collections or the Uncharted games, even the Tomb Raider games, because it's in that same style, that sit and cover. Even maybe a better comparison is Gears of War. It's lacking all of that stuff that make those games really good series. Again, though, I got that game for $10 on the PlayStation Store, so I figured I'd get it and play it. Boy, does it look pretty, though, and it's an interesting story. So if anybody out there has a PlayStation, you haven't played it, if you can find it on sale again, it may go on sale before Christmas. I don't know. But I was able to pick it up for $10 on the PlayStation Store, not in a physical store. So be on the lookout for PlayStation Store. They have some pretty good deals. DC Universe Online, I played that before on PC. I was just downloading it on my PlayStation 4. It is the same thing as it was 3 or 4 years ago when I played that game on PC. So not a lot has changed with that. I think this game was on PS3 as well. And they essentially just moved it over to PS4 and it runs just as well as the PC version runs, and that's not a whole lot. It's a fun game if you like DC superheroes. It's free to play. You don't even need PS Plus, so that's a plus, no pun intended. And it's solid. The frame rate chugs every now and then, but as with any MMO, that's just how it happens. It's a uncapped frame rate, so you'll be playing at one moment and it'll feel buttery smooth. The next minute, it'll tank down to below 30 frames per second. And that kind of stuff really bothers me. So I haven't played that one too much. But again, that's a really old game. Rocket League is fantastic. Magicka 2, boy, that game, it's just so fun. That game's also on PC. So if anybody listening has a PC and you love Magicka 1 or you even liked, what was that Xbox One arcade game? Castle Crashers. If you like that game, it's in a similar style, I guess. You have four little wizards that are different colors that you can play as. The key here is you can combine your elements. So let's say Troy shoots an ice beam out and I shoot a fire beam out. They'll combine to make smoke and it will do special effects. And you can combine your different abilities that these mages have and kind of discover new elements at the same time. You can also combine on your own, like rock and fire, to essentially be throwing meteors, which is essentially, that's what it is. It's a rock that's on fire. So coming out of the sky. That game is really good. Again, you can get it on PC if you don't have a PS4. And if you like Magicka 1, it's a total thumbs up on that one. I love that game. It's also co-op too, so anybody, if you're playing on PS4, you can play that with other people. So just like in the first one, which was not on PS4. Let's see. I also have been playing the Uncharted Collection, which I won't talk too much about that game, other than the fact that it's a remaster, and the remasters are very good. I do have to admit, Troy, and I think I mentioned this to you as well. I don't know if it's just timing that I'm playing these games complete for the first time. Boy, do they not hold up to as much as I have heard about them holding up. I think the first one was good. The second one was really good. The third one was like, wait, what? I got done with these games and was just like, I need to go play Tomb Raider because Tomb Raider does all of this better. I understand Uncharted, it's doing what Tomb Raider did first, but the Tomb Raider games, there is just so much refinement in that Nathan Drake formula. And I don't mean to bash Sony on their Uncharted games. People who really loved them, I can see why. But some of the shooting in the third one was rough. Some of the boss fights were rough. Not just in the third one, in the second one most notably. There were some really rough moments, and I found by the end of beating that trilogy, I was like, thank God that was over. So I don't know, maybe it's because I played them back to back, and you know, other people played them in different chunks or what. But I was certainly at the end of that going, man, I just want to go back and play Tomb Raider now. Until Dawn is the surprise hit in my household. I remember you and me joking about this game and us being like, well, it is getting kind of good reviews. Like, what the hell? Anyway, this is actually interesting. It took a wild turn last night. And my fiance and I have been playing this game kind of jointly. She'll play one night and I'll play the next night. You know, the same story, us watching the same thing. So it's not two separate playthroughs. It's the same playthrough we play. And man, it's actually got some interesting stuff going on. We're probably halfway, if not three quarters of the way through the story. And the graphics are real, real pretty. But this is just like even more so than Rise and the Order. It's better to look at this as an interactive movie, because most of the time you controlling the character is just walking, it's walking down the hallway to another cutscene. Like, that is most of the game. And then you do some like quick time events, you make some decisions, that kind of thing throughout the game, which makes it interesting. But the whole story that is being told, it's pretty wildly fascinating. And I don't think it's something that could be done on film or on TV, which would give you a longer, you know, runtime, of course, because you could do, you know, 10, 12 episodes or something like that. I think this is a story that can only be told in this style on video games, in the video games medium. And I'm glad games like this exist, because it is really interesting and really fascinating to pull someone like my fiance into this game, who is not a big gamer. She certainly does play some games, but to really pull her in and to make her go, hey, are we about to play Until Dawn? I think that's really impressive. And kudos to this game, man. It's certainly not a 10. It's not a 9. It's not an 8. Probably hovering around a 7 in my book if we were giving ratings on this show. I'm enjoying it. I don't actively think about it like I would, let's say, Fallout or The Witcher is a great example. But when I come home and we boot this game up, I'm like, okay, let's do this. Is it scary, if anybody out there is wondering? Because it is a horror game. It's not scary. I probably shouldn't say that because somebody's probably going to get frightened. It's not The Conjuring scary, if you saw that film. It's not It from Stephen King scary. It's a lot of slasher scary and some other stuff I won't spoil. So kind of more along the veins of Scream or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So if that's the kind of thing that you get afraid of, I wouldn't recommend this game, but it's not that bad. The fear stuff isn't that crazy. And it's not like the game Fear, where things are just popping out at you immediately with that little girl. Troy, did you play Fear?
Yeah, I played Fear.
Jesus, that little girl. Oh my God, that thing was terrifying. I played that game with two full-grown men beside me in a well-lit dorm room, like on a couch for our RAs. I was playing on his Xbox 360, playing that game, because he was too afraid to play it. And I was terrified with two additional full-grown men in the room with the lights on. Like, I was still terrified of that game. So it's not quite like that. It's not, you know, jump out and scare you at the worst possible time like Fear. And that's about it. That's what I've been playing most of. Oh, I forgot one. Infamous Second Son. That is probably on this whole list that I outlined, maybe the best game on the list. If you want to remove Rocket League from the equation just because it's so different. The game I cannot stop thinking about and that I've started playing more of now is Infamous Second Son. And it's pretty strange considering the first two games didn't exactly score that well. They weren't exactly critical hits. And I've played both of those, probably about 2 to 3 hours of each of those. And I left those two games feeling really dry, and I felt like they were not that great, but I could see why people might like them, especially if you were a PS4 fanboy. However, Second Son is fantastic, I think. It may be one of the best superhero video games ever made. Obviously, this is not Marvel or DC or anyone of the sort. This is completely original. Troy Baker does fantastic. The graphics are pretty. The storyline is intriguing. It's certainly not The Witcher. It's certainly not Her Story, but it is good enough that makes you want to know what's going on in this world. There's not so much there that makes you go, man, I wish I would have played the first two. The gameplay is solid. The developers have patched things into this game to give you choice. So there is a frame cap limiter. If you want to play the game locked at 30 frames per second, you can do that. It's good, man. It's real good. And I just have fun when I play that game. And there are moments in the Uncharted games as I'm playing them where I was just like, ugh, I just tried to stealth kill 10 guys and I gave it 10 tries. And each time I screw up in a random way that I can't really control. And then I get destroyed by grenade launchers and rocket launchers or what have you. And those games really were frustrating at times, but Second Son, it's just fun to run around as a superhero with the powers that this guy has. And I really, really been enjoying that one. And poor old Fallout 4. I don't know. I don't know if I'm ever going to make it back to that game. I think it might be time to uninstall it from my computer. I don't know. Have you gone back? Have you beat it, Troy?
That's really harsh. Uninstall it from a computer? I've been playing some of it. Like, whenever the mood hits me, I was like, okay, I'll play a little bit of Fallout 4. I'm not playing it as religiously as I was, but take your time with it. Play like an hour or so.
I shouldn't say uninstall it and in the way that I did, because that would imply that, oh, this game is so bad, I'm just going to remove it from my hard drive. Looking at my hard drive right now, I have 5 gigabytes free space.
Yeah, you
I run an SSD, obviously, but I got my SSD a while back when the 120 gigabyte SSDs were like $250. So I haven't upgraded yet. So this my main SSD, my main hard drive has my OS on it. The games I really, really, really want to play and be good, I install those on my SSD. And when I installed Fallout 4, I had just barely enough space, so I had to remove some programs or something. So I did put it on my hard drive. Yeah, I only got like 5 gigs free. So it may be time to remove that. Or maybe Mad Max. I don't know which hard drive that's installed on. So I gotta beat that game too. Crazy.
Might want to just uninstall both of those from your hard drive then.
That's about it from what I've been playing. I played the multiplayer beta for Uncharted 4. If anybody listening is curious about that, check the previous episode. I didn't play a whole lot of it because I'm not really interested in Uncharted multiplayer. I'm more interested in the gameplay stuff. So, or the single player stuff. So I didn't play a whole lot of it, but I played enough to kind of understand what they were going for. I think they got something pretty compelling in their hands, and it's fun watching Naughty Dog evolve as a developer from Jack and Daxter to Uncharted to The Last of Us to now Uncharted 4 to see how their multiplayer has changed from the beginning. Man, it's cool to see that. So I'm really glad I finally got to play those. And again, Blue Point Games, the guys who handled that remaster, whew, they did a fantastic job. That's the type of remastering I want to pay for and be a part of. Troy, that opening bar fight, I remember seeing that on PS3 as my brother played it and going, ugh, this frame rate is awful. There's so many jagged edges, and like, this game could be so much cooler if they would just like not try and make it as realistic as possible. Now, that opening brawl bar fight scene, man, that thing, it just purrs. It is so fun to do all that fighting and stuff. I didn't feel like it was a pain in the butt at all at that point. And I actually like the opening to Uncharted 3, I think, probably more than Uncharted 2. But not really taking anything away from Uncharted 2. That was a pretty fantastic opening, the train sequence. So overall, I had a blast with it. Is there anything else, Troy, you had in your GameCube?
Nope. haven't been playing anything else yet. That's about it.
All right, let's move right into what to look forward to. And I want to go ahead and plug something, and that is I was at the movie theater this past weekend seeing The Good Dinosaur. I'm not plugging that film, although that's a pretty good film. It's a shame that film is not really getting a lot of... It's getting some good praise. It's just not getting a lot of good ticket sales. It's a really good movie. If anybody out there listening, you should definitely go check that out before Star Wars blows up the world this coming weekend. So The Good Dinosaur, it's a good film. But in the previews for that film, I saw two video game films coming next year. The first one made me go, wow, this might actually be the first successful video game movie, and that's the Ratchet & Clank film. It does seem like it's missing something that makes films like Despicable Me really good, because this is a computer-generated, you know, it's all CG in the Pixar-style film for children, and as well fans of the original game, because it's a retelling. But it seems like it's just missing something that, like, Despicable Me has, that, you know, Up has, that almost every Pixar hit has, you know, Finding Nemo, Toy Story, the Minions films, Shrek, you can go down the list. It seems like it's missing the child-friendly punch of laughter, and I don't know why. There are funny moments there, but I'm watching the trailer, and maybe it was just me knowing the history of video game movies, kind of being like, this is probably not going to be good, so I was questioning the whole thing. But it just seemed like there were not as many laugh-out-loud moments like you see in, for example, the Minions trailers, when you see those, that make kids go, ooh, I want to see that. So I'm hoping that's going to be the first successful video game movie, and we'll kind of go more into those types of films, because I think we got a lot of franchises in video games that could benefit from that. Crash Bandicoot. I mean, why isn't there a Mario CG movie? That could be great. What's the one? Oh, Jak and Daxter. I mean, there's all kinds of games, movies. Sonic. You could totally do that. So hopefully this is the best one, or the first video game movie to really run with it. But unfortunately, and I really shouldn't say unfortunately, because it actually made me laugh, there's a second film coming out summer of next year, Angry Birds. Angry Birds movie.
That's right.
When I first saw it, I was like, this is stupid. And at a couple, maybe 30 seconds into the trailer, I'm actually laughing. So they might have something good there. And obviously, more people know Angry Birds than they do Ratchet and Clank. So I would probably bet almost all the money that I have that Ratchet and Clank will do worse financially than Angry Birds, and the Angry Birds will probably be the first major video game. That's so strange to say. Angry Birds will probably be the most successful video game movie that we've ever had. But it doesn't look horrible, you know? I don't know where they got the story from, but hey, all of the birds are there, you know. Red's there, the bomb bird is there. So it could be cool for kids to watch and parents to go, oh yeah, I know Angry Birds. My kid plays, you know, all 12 of those games. So who knows? But I did see those in the theaters, and I wanted to mention those because they're video games, and I thought that was interesting that I had two video game movies shown to me. What about you, Troy? Is there anything you want to bring to light? Anything you look forward to?
Game wise, I would have to say the next purchase I'll probably have to get is XCOM 2, ooh, whenever that comes out in February.
Ooh, that's a good one. There's been a lot of articles on that game lately.
Uh-huh. They actually did a little bit of gameplay on IGN, about 20 minutes or so of gameplay and commentary at the same time. It looks interesting. It's XCOM. It's definitely XCOM, so it's going to be hard. And I can't wait to play another XCOM game, and that's going to fulfill that wish right there whenever that comes out in February.
Yeah, it's currently listed for February 5th, so that's not too far away. That's actually, you know, only about a month and a half away, so that's pretty cool. I was thinking that game was much further away.
That'd be confused with all the other games that are supposed to be coming out. That were supposed to come out early 2016, and now are like mid-2016 to late 2016.
Yeah, speaking of delayed games, I guess we maybe want to announce, or not announce, but also just really quickly touch on Fable Legends, the beta. I know a lot of people have been down on that game, and I've actually been really anxious to try it because this was the poster child game for cross-platform play between Windows 10 and Xbox One. And that is something I deeply believe Microsoft needs to be touching more on, because it is fantastic to be on my computer and chat with my Xbox One friends who are on their Xbox Ones, obviously, via the Xbox app on Windows 10. I think that is fantastic. It works with any microphone on your PC, whatever speakers you have, whatever headphones you have. It doesn't matter. It's fluid. Joining parties is great. So playing games from PC to Xbox One, it needs to happen. And that was supposed to be the poster child. And the only reason I bring it up again is because the beta was supposed to be out right now, if not earlier. I think the game actually was supposed to be out right now. It's in closed beta now. I don't have a beta key, but the Lionhead Studios went ahead and said that they're going to delay the open beta until early spring. So more than likely end of March, early April, hopefully, is when the open beta happens and everybody can try it. And see if this cross-platform thing is pretty good. They claim they're trying to work on it to be bigger and better, and they bit off more than they could chew. Yada yada yada. I don't want to disrespect them for delaying the game. I think if they need to delay the game, certainly delay the game. So, but it's going to be a free-to-play title. So if people are down about it, hey, it's going to be free. You can totally try it out. There's no harm to you. I think it looks interesting. I think it could be kind of fun. So, I don't know. I was kind of bummed that the beta got pushed back, because I've actually been checking on that, following their Twitter handle, Lionhead Studios, hoping that they would just randomly announce, hey, it's an open beta, go try out. So, I don't know. I thought that kind of sucked. That news just broke recently, maybe yesterday or the day before. So, that's unfortunate. But hey, if they got to fix some stuff, they got to fix some stuff. So, all right, that should probably wrap us up here, right, Troy? You got anything else you want to touch on before we close?
No, I think that's about it.
All right, well, like I said, that will wrap us up for another episode of VGCast. As always, if you guys like what you see, like what you hear, give us a thumbs up, a like, a review, and a rating if you like to as well, to show us some support. Feel free to subscribe via iTunes Podcast Addict, which is my recommendation if you're on Android, or simply by visiting podomatic.com. And as always, you guys, keep gaming.